Welcome to the Money Mile Podcast. I am your host, Justin Waller, and I'm happy you are here. We like to think of Money Mile as standing at the corner of triathlon and personal finance. We believe that age group triathletes are the lifeblood of our sport, and we want to shine the light on good people doing great things in our sport. Today, we have a very special guest on Money Mile. Today, we are joined by Denise Allen. Denise is a board-certified health and wellness coach. She has been a high school health and science educator for 30 years. She started participating in triathlons in 2010, and she is the 2022 USAT winner for the Most Inspirational Comeback Award. This is one of our special interview episodes, so it will be longer than a normal episode, and there will be a brief intermission form check opportunity in the middle-ish as well, so look forward to that. If you have signed up for the Money for the Long Run newsletter, you will have the show notes in your email inbox. If you are not receiving the newsletter, seriously, what are you waiting for? In the interim, drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets, pick your eyes up, make sure you have a nice forward lean from the ankles, and listen up to this conversation with the one, the only, Denise Allen. Denise, welcome to the Money Mile Podcast.
Hi, Justin. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Denise, obviously, you've been around the sport for a fair while now. I'm hoping you can share with our audience a little bit about how you got started, how you got introduced to triathlon.
Yeah, certainly. I started out as a marathon runner qualifying for Boston Marathons, and I ended up in this training group in Maine that had a lot of triathletes in there, and they were doing long course triathlon, and I was just very intrigued about their training schedule and the entire lifestyle. So of course I signed up for 70.3 as my first race, meaning that I'm the type of person who likes to just jump in both feet first. So yeah, and I was hooked. My first 70.3 was Timmerman in New Hampshire, and I absolutely loved the variety of terrain and the people and the high frequency energy that was available at that event, and I was forever hooked, and here I am now, years later, still enjoying the sport.
That was back in 2010 when you originally started?
Yes.
That's all right. Okay. Super cool. So you have been doing this a little while, so that's great. And I'm kind of curious from your perspective, I've found that success means different things to different people at different points in their career. So I'm curious how you define success at this point in your career.
At this point in my career, I'm just happy and blessed that I get to participate. There have been certain challenges in the trajectory of my triathlon career that had created a start-stop sort of events, and the fact that I get to participate now and be able-bodied and to have some successes, meaning making the podium or still having PRs, is super fun. But for me, just being able to play and to be able to be part of a team and to share that with other people is how I define success.
Fantastic. As I mentioned, we like to think of Money Mile as standing at the intersection of triathlon and personal finance. I'm kind of curious from your perspective, what has been the best investment in the form of money, time, energy? What's been the best investment that you've made in your triathlon or athletic career?
Well, hands down, I'd have to say it's a good bike helmet. And that has to do with the fact that I have been hit by a motor vehicle while biking, and it was my Rudy helmet that saved my life. I really credit that helmet with keeping the noggin in one piece. So that is the brand that I continue to ride with now and race with. And I think having a good helmet that meets the standards and criteria for quality helmets is really important. We never know when an accident is going to happen, and we want to be absolutely prepared for that. It's a good investment.
Perfect. I definitely agree. Good helmets are important. And I know that the technology is always improving, and there's a certain amount of sales type stuff that goes on, or, I want the fancy new this or that. But in general, I believe it's still the standard practice that you should be replacing your helmets, even if they haven't been in an accident. You should be replacing them periodically, not just for the fancy new aero whatever, but actually to replace, make sure you have solid foam or you have the right types of foam, things haven't degraded while they're sitting out in your garage or whatever. My understanding is that's every 5 years that you should be replacing a helmet. Is that in alignment with your understanding, or do you have a different view of that?
sooner. I thought it was like every 2 to 3 years, but I could be completely wrong on that. But I am a huge supporter of check those expiration dates. They are stamped on the inside of them, and the manufacturers on their websites do post what their recommendations are for replacement. I replace mine every 3 years, whether it needs it or not. You know, Rudy is always having new technology coming out. I like personally to explore what that new technology has to offer. You know, is it cooling? Is it heating? Does it have vents? You know, obviously, I know if it's coming from Rudy, it's meeting those safety standards because they obviously want to be supporting triathlon and triathletes in participating in the sport in a safe way.
Yeah, that's great. I will admit, I'm going to have to go home and look inside my helmet. I don't know that I have seen an expiration date in there, but it might be time. And I have heard really good things about the Rudy helmets in particular. I have a Specialized, I believe, a couple of different helmets, but I'll definitely have to give them a look. You mentioned earlier as well that there were a couple of other things that you have invested in that have significantly improved your triathlon experience. I was hoping you might be able to share with us a little bit about some of those other things that have improved things for you.
Yeah, well, hands down, Bisaddle, which is a saddle for your triathlon bike, was the only saddle that allowed me to get back onto the bike post accident. I had fractured my sacrum when I was hit by the motor vehicle and really struggled with being able to get back onto the bike. I also had to have surgery where I had to reattach some rectus abdominal muscles to the pubic bone and had the adductor longus tenotomy done, which is essentially it was almost ready to release itself, and they just let it be released. So, you know, I trained with one less muscle in my leg. But the bisaddle, it was getting back on that saddle was a limiter for me. And the bisaddle with that custom fit is what allowed me to get not only just back under the saddle, but get back into aero position and to be completely comfortable. There's a post on one of their social media sites where, you know, I just completed an Ironman Indiana, and my response was, I never thought of their saddle once. Honestly, that hands down is like the best compliment you can give to someone who's producing bike saddles.
That's fantastic. And I had not heard of Bisaddle before we started this conversation. I'm definitely going to have to give them an additional look. We do not have any sponsors or anything like that. So we don't have any conflict of interest or anything like that. It seems like some really cool technology and is not an astronomical price point either. It seems like it should be very attainable for a lot of triathletes. And when we recognize, especially for us long course folks, when we're going to be out there for several hours on the bike, being comfortable and being able to come off the bike comfortably and run solid after that is a huge benefit. So I'm definitely looking forward to checking into that as well.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people who have struggle with saddle sores. So it's not just for people who've been hit by a car, right? It's people who just struggle with getting comfortable on their bike for the variety of different reasons. And when you visit their website, you'll see professional testimonials as well from the pro triathletes who are using the saddle also. And Brick, who is the owner of the company, is a fabulous resource to what saddle might work best for you. I have a bisaddle on every single one of my bikes, whether it's the road bike, tri bike, or my fat bike. They're different versions, but that's my go-to saddle.
Nice, very good. Okay, but good stuff to look forward to here. You had also mentioned a couple of things as far as the sleep component, sleep and recovery. Could you share with us a little bit about those?
Yeah, you know, so sleep is so important to all of us as triathletes, right? It's when our body is rebuilding and recovering. And I don't ever skimp on I prioritize the sleep component, making sure that it's part of my habit schedule. And so I actually purchased, it's called a SleepMe or a chili sleep pad for my bed. That does is it actually changes the temperature of your bed throughout the night to facilitate the different sleep cycles. And I do have different settings for the different seasons. So, for example, I like to go to bed with a cool bed in the summer, and I like getting into that warm bed in the winter and then letting it cool down so that I can drop into that deep REM sleep and then move through the cycles for that 8 hours. And I have just found that it's really, you know, I sleep like a baby, and it doesn't matter how hot it is outside or how many dogs may be on the bed trying to grab part of that the warmth from the sleeping pad at night. But it really has helped me with making sure that I get a good night's sleep, and I have found that that's really been instrumental in my recovery from hard workouts.
Excellent. I'm hoping that that mattress pad also has some control for maybe each half of the bed if there happens to be someone else in the bed with you. I know my wife sleeps a lot differently than I do, so I can imagine there might be some conflicts there if it was one unilateral bit. So is that like split controlled as well?
Yeah, so you can get one that covers the whole bed, and I have one that just covers one side of the bed. So, again, you can get it to fit whatever, if someone wants one or doesn't want one or get two, and I believe the one that covers the entire bed has dual zones so that you can customize it based on your situation at home. And there are other models that are out there at different price points. This is one that's at a fairly reasonable price point that isn't going to break the bank.
Very nice. As we are recording this, it is short. Well, we are in the midst of the holiday season of 2023. So when this actually is heard by our listeners, it is probably going to be in the 2024 year. But I know I'm listening to a tip here for a potential holiday gift. We'll see how that unfolds.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had a great race at the main 70.3 this year, finished fifth in your age group, and improved your time year over year by 18 minutes. Could you share with us a little bit about how you did that and how you felt crossing the finish line?
Yeah, well, I think there were two main factors. So the first one was the current for that swim was phenomenal. It is tidal and current driven. It was super fast that year. Everyone was a little giddy about their swim times for that year. It is a technical course, however, once you get out of the water. It is a hilly course, and the run certainly has its dynamic hill at about mile 9 and an interesting transition. But that course, fortunately, again, hometown advantage, right? I can go up and train on the bike course, and I can, go run the rail trail and have some experience with that. We're not allowed to swim in the river, nor would I want to, when it's not, there's sturgeons in there. So I have no interest in swimming with the sturgeons. But what I really did that year was I run with a metronome, and I run with a metronome post-surgery to retrain my gait. Because of those, reattaching muscles and trying to work with some biomechanics struggles, I run with a metronome. And for that race, I ran without the metronome, and my watch also broke. And so I was running without a time, and I was biking without the power numbers. And I was like, I'm just going to race based on perceived effort, RPE. And that's how I did all of my races this year. And it was a really interesting process because it forced me to lean into discomfort and to trust the process and to do a little bit of a Hail Mary. I'm a strong cyclist, love the course. But on the run, I was like, let's just go all out, see what I have, try something new. And if I hit the wall, I hit the wall. I did it having fun. So I went out strong. And one of my friends said that she looked at my times on the tracker and she's like, what the is Denise doing? And I was just feeling good. And I am a little bit competitive. There were some people in the course that I was like, okay, I don't want her to beat me. I want to stay in front of her. And so I was pushing the line a little bit. And I was feeling safe in my body to do that, which when you've had traumatic accidents, that's an interesting mental component mindset of feeling safe in your body, knowing where the line is to push. And I just kept riding it. And I'm so grateful and so full of gratitude that my body let me do that right to the finish line. I had a great result. And the reflection on that is it might be time to redo my numbers. Right?
It sounds about right. And I know I've heard a couple of different people talk recently about, I've heard it called like the free running side, where like we get so bogged down in the technology and like, oh, we've got to have this thing and that gadget and these shoes and that thing, versus just go out and run and feel your body and go out and do your best and see how it goes. And it sounds like that really benefited you and worked well on race day.
It worked great, and it was such a fun experience that I just kept trying it again and had great results. There's some intel there. Although I did pay for not running with the metronome. The metronome allows me to have equal time on the ground, right? So I'm not crossing over and I'm having a forward movement. So I definitely had some biomechanical discomfort at the end of that race because, my pelvis just doesn't like not being in that forward motion that it's supposed to be in. So, there's definitely some strength training still that needs to be done and some, working with that limiter, but I'm excited about what the future holds.
I know we're going to talk about it in a minute as well, and getting a little bit more of a backstory of kind of what the accident and what happened and how your recovery process has gone for you, and kind of some of the challenges that you've experienced from that. Before we transition into that little bit, I did also notice that you had finished fourth at the Massachusetts 70.3 as well. It sounds like you have had a fantastic year. I was kind of curious if you had any thoughts on the Massachusetts race versus the main race and kind of how those things stacked up for you.
That was an interesting race because that was one where I was able to, again, hometown advantage. I was able to go down and ride the course with some folks from Massachusetts, and that helped. Again, a very technical, hilly bike course, but the heat was super hard that day. I actually was miserable during that entire race. I didn't like the smell or the odor of the swim, and it was so warm and humid that this mainer, who was just coming out of winter, was not prepared for that heat and humidity and really struggled on the run. And I was really having a defeatist mindset of like, this is horrible. But I was like, stick with it. You don't quit. Quitting's not an option. And so I stuck with it. And lo and behold, everyone was having a tough day with the heat and the humidity. So it's one of those lessons, right? Of like, you never know what's going on with the other athletes too. Maybe they're having the same experience. You know, so I landed fourth in the age group and I was incredibly shocked. Didn't expect that at all. And pleasantly surprised.
And you had also raced Happy Valley as well. I'm not familiar with that one. I understand this was the first year for that race. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was the first year and I absolutely love that course. I did it as a training ride. I didn't race it. So I intentionally held myself back. And the course was delightful, particularly the swim, because transition was in Eagles State Park, I believe is what it's called. And so they had no loud music and none of that ominous anxiety producing you're in the hands of the starter that always jacks up my nervous system. It was super chill and quiet, and I was able to do a warm-up swim, and I just was able to complete my strategy on the swim, which was to thread the buoys, and if I felt comfortable enough to drop in behind someone's feet and draft as long as I could, and then if that didn't work, just go back to threading the buoys, and I had a great swim, and with the bike, it was just so much fun, because the Amish folks came out in droves to cheer us on. And it was just so much fun to engage with them and to say thank you or a thumbs up or wave and to just really support other athletes on the course. And I really enjoyed that. And then the run was super fun running through the campus. It was mentally engaging. And finishing in the stadium with on the Jumbotron was just really sort of like this really cool finish.
That's Penn State, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool that you get to do that.
Yeah, it was a very dynamic course, and I would go back and do that one again and race it.
Yeah. Very nice. And actually race it as opposed to a training day.
Yes.
Now that I've heard a couple of really good commentaries on it, so I might have to look into that. I have not done much racing on the East Coast, but there's always next year. We'll see how things go.
There's some really fun new courses that Ironman has put out.
Yeah. And you also have some beyond Ironman experience as well. And most recently, I understand that you had the opportunity to race at the 2023 World Triathlon Championships in Spain. I didn't even know that was a thing. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that happened and what that's all about?
Yeah. So last year, I raced in the national championships that were in Milwaukee, and I was able to earn a slot on Team USA. So it was super cool to go out and race. That's a race where, you know, they have lots of events going on, everything from a sprint to Olympic to just swim races. And I went and I just participated in all of them just for super fun. They're all, you know, one day after the other. And I was able to qualify for the Olympic distance World Triathlon Finals in Pontevedra, Spain. And spent the year fundraising for that and figuring out the logistics. It was my first time racing internationally. And I had a blast. Pontevedra, Spain is absolutely beautiful. They actually call it the Maine of Spain because it's on the ocean and they do mussel farming. And there was a lot of cultural diversity there that is from Northern Ireland. I was so grateful that I was able to be present enough to be aware of what I was doing, meaning not hijacked by the competition and more focused on enjoying the moment. And so to be grateful that I was swimming in the river and biking through the mountains and seeing the villas on the mountainside and then running through the streets that the Romans had built, you know, it was just amazing. It was just an experience of a lifetime for me, really. My performance was not my best because of jet lag and TSA took my nutrition fuel, but honestly, it doesn't matter because the teammates are amazing. They're, you know, they educated me a ton about how to navigate international travel and international racing, and it was just an amazing life experience.
Very cool. So that makes sense to me now as I hear you describe that. for whatever reason, ever since I started in triathlon, my world has kind of gone to the half iron distance and longer. So that's just kind of where my brain goes. But competing at national level and then on the world stage, that sounds like a really fantastic experience for you, or it sounds like it was. I'm really glad you had that opportunity.
Yeah, me too. It was really transformative in many ways, just being able to be a part of such an electric group of people that are also so supportive.
Very cool. How many members of Team USA were racing on the triathlon side?
Goodness, I feel like I should know that number. There were folks that were on the Olympic distance, sprint distance, duathlon distance, Paralympic. So I'm not sure what all those numbers are. I want to guess there were over 200 total, only because I know that there are 180 athletes that still have their bikes being held by a freight company who is not releasing their bikes at this point in time. So I flew with my own bike, but those that used the transport still don't have their bikes back yet.
Oh my. And when was that race?
In September.
So we are recording this at the end of November. So that was literally months. So word of caution out there to anyone who might be looking at racing internationally, be careful about how you're getting your gear there and how you're getting your gear home. Who knows what could happen?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I used a Scion bike bag and traveled with my bike, and I had absolutely zero issues. And it was, you know, for me, it was a seamless transport.
So I know there are lots of aspects to international travel and all that. You had mentioned that when we were discussing this earlier, you had mentioned that this really put, as you had referred to it, it put an exclamation point on a 10-year healing journey. And I think part of that is related to the fact that in 2022, you won the USAT Multisport Most Inspirational Comeback Award. I think all of this kind of comes together nicely here. I was hoping you could share with us a little bit about what events transpired here and kind of what your experience has been.
Yeah. So in 2013, I was training for Ironman Lake Placid, and I was about a month out from the race. It was on June 9th, and I was headed out for a century ride. I got 12 miles in. It was a beautiful blue sky day. And a woman came across the side road. She did not stop at her intersection. And she hit me with the front corner of her vehicle while I was cycling. And she did stop, which I appreciate. But that accident, I fractured my sacrum at S2 and S3 and sustained a mild traumatic brain injury, multiple soft tissue injuries that just took a long time to recover from. And spent 2 weeks in Maine Medical Center, and then that started a trajectory of years of healing and physical therapy and really relearning how to be an athlete, relearning how to run, figuring out how I needed to change how my bike was set up. So I'm not in true aero anymore, but I am in a position that I can sustain for a full Ironman distance. And, you know, I get to play, you know, like I said, that's success. I get to play. So I swim a little bit differently. You know, I joke with people that I swim like a drunken sailor, you know, I bike like I stole it and I run like SpongeBob SquarePants, but I get to play. So, you know, the biggest lesson for me that's been hard is learning one, what I need to do. And then two, doing what works for Denise and not worrying about what that looks like and not worrying about that my training plan or the way that I do things looks like all the other cool triathletes, and really sticking to what works for me. And when I do that, I get to make the podium. And when I don't, the wheels come off the wagon.
Well, and what I love about that is that even if you didn't make the podium, you're still doing it your way. You're out there, you're enjoying yourself, and you are participating and enjoying this sport that we all enjoy, but you're doing it on your terms. I would much rather see you out there happy doing your thing than seeing someone miserable doing it some way that's uncomfortable for them, just so maybe they could shave off a couple seconds. Is that really why most of us are out here doing this?
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, triathlon is how I'm dialing up my longevity quotient, right? It's also how I'm having fun. Honestly, it helps me to bring about my best version of self. And so I'm in this game for the long haul. And so that means I need to do it in a way that works for me.
Thank you for sharing that story, Denise. And so going from 2013 and the progression of that, to 2023. So 2022, you won the comeback award, 2023, multiple podium finishes. And it sounds like you are headed in a good trajectory from here. Are you still experiencing any sort of specific physical challenges or pain points because of that? Or are you, do you consider yourself mostly recovered at this point?
I think both of those are true. I am mostly recovered, right? I have a new baseline, right? I think that's the way to look at it. And so, yes, I have biomechanic dysfunctions that I will work with for the rest of my life. And so as my physical therapist would say, these are your exercises for life now. You don't get to not do them. If you want to play, these are the things you now have to do if you want to participate. And so I, like anyone, sometimes have a temper tantrum about that and don't want to do those things, right? And then I pay for it and I'll be like, okay, he was right. Do your job, you know, that's just normal human psyche. But yeah, I mean, I still experience some physical discomfort. Is nothing like what I used to have. And I use meditation and mindfulness to manage that. I talk to the cells of my body. I love them up. And I know that with my mind, I can change my experience of pain. And I learned that from my bike accident and managing the discomfort of that in the early stages from a Dr. Beck, who happened to be at Maine Med. And that's one of the most grateful lessons that I've learned from him. And so I continue to use that today.
Fantastic. Very interesting. I don't think that we have come close to tapping into the true power of the mind. And while I don't know that you could necessarily think your way out of pain, I know that you can definitely make pain a lot worse by how you think about it. There's a lot that you can do to help ease that process and make it more manageable versus making it worse on yourself. That's kind of my initial thought. Is there more to that that you'd like to share?
Dr. Dan Siegel has a book that's called Mindsight, and he's done a ton of research on that. If you change your thoughts, you change your physiology. And if you change your physiology, you change how you're feeling and you change your experience. And so there's this really cool practices that he has in that book and in another book called Aware. And of course, he has plenty of podcasts and YouTube channel as well. But that practice alone, combined with some of the visualization that I've learned, some of John Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based pain management strategies, all of that combined really helped me to downregulate my experience of what we describe as pain. Doesn't mean I make it necessarily go away, although sometimes I am able to do that.
All right. It sounds like I've got some more research to do. No, that's great. I appreciate the resources there. And if it's okay with you, we'll go back and we'll add some links in the show notes to the references that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of share that with the community. So if we are doing our job correctly here, all the people who are listening to this are out on their long, steady run, probably not having a good opportunity to jot down a note or something like that. So all the show notes will be in part of the newsletter and in their inboxes when we're all done with all this stuff. Denise, from your perspective, what would you consider to be the most underrated aspect of triathlons or something you'd like for triathletes that they should know more about?
I think it kind of falls into two things. I'd say one is the work-life balance. Like it's really easy to look at a training plan or to have a goal and to say, I can do that. And then the reality hits when you're trying to merge that with life and life responsibilities and the wavering motivation or energy levels that you may have because maybe you didn't get enough sleep or you didn't eat the right foods at the right timing. And so you're just feeling a little bit off. I think having grace and a little bit of self-compassion in those moments is really important when you're trying to put all the ducks in a row or all the marbles on the shelf. Sometimes it's just not that easy. And I don't know that we talk about that enough. When we look at our social media pages, we see all these people who are just nailing it, right? Probably even mine is sort of slanted in that way, right? Like make it look easy, the great photos. And we don't necessarily always talk about the realities of, you know, you're still sore from the previous workout or you had a tough day at work and you're just feeling kind of emotional about it or whatever the variable may be and how that influences the ebb and flow of energy that we have to offer to triathlon.
I love the way that you put that, just giving ourselves a little bit more grace and self-compassion to be able to understand not every day is going to be perfect, and that's okay. Generally, I like to think of triathletes as high-performing people. We push ourselves. We are not typically couch potatoes, taking it easy every day. We are pushing ourselves, whether you are like Denise and at the top of a podium, or whether you're mid-pack athlete like I am, we're still pushing ourselves and we're doing more than the average person is doing. So sometimes we need to give ourselves a little bit more compassionate perspective on that and not give yourself such a hard time because you're not able to do everything at a 10 or an 11. Sometimes you have to take a breath. So Denise, thank you for that perspective. I appreciate that.
And I'm not always the best one at practicing what I preach.
So you might not be an 11 at that, and that's okay too.
Exactly.
It is time for a quick form check. Money Mile is powered by Waller Financial Coaching, a full-time fiduciary financial planning firm. If you want to improve your financial form and improve your financial independence, you can get a copy of Financial Independence for Triathletes by texting Money Mile, one word, to 33777. You will also be added to the Money for the Long Run newsletter. Again, text Money Mile, one word, to 33777. Now let's check in on that running form. If you have your own form cues, please use those. If not, here are mine. Drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets. Bring your eyes up to the horizon and lean forward from the ankles for the rest of this episode of Money Mile. Denise, what has been your biggest mistake while training or racing?
My biggest mistake would be, one, not doing what works for me, right? Wanting to go out and train with others and go along with the group or do their workout with them because I really value the social connection over the workout. And yet that sometimes doesn't set me up for success with what my body needs. So that might set me back. The other biggest mistake would be not realizing how expensive the sport can be and having a plan, which is your wheelhouse, right? But having a plan or having a budget for triathlon or blowing that budget because you're like, it'll be okay just this once, right? Like, I think it's just really important to like be super like self-parenting around the sport of triathlon and how expensive it can be, not just from signing up for races and the travel, but just for all the equipment and nutrition and, you know, what does that really look like? And writing that down and saying, well, how much am I really spending on that? And is all of that necessary? And what does that budget look like in the trajectory of your own goals for your personal finances?
And I certainly appreciate that. Obviously, in this line of work, you know, helping clients understand the balance of that and being able to still actively participate in the things that you love and enjoy, but being able to do that in balance. No, you don't need a new super bike every other year, but being able to embrace that and find good balance in those things. So I appreciate you sharing your perspective there as well. I kind of chuckle because I know we talked about this a little bit just a moment ago, but what would you consider to be your favorite, the favorite triathlon that you've competed in?
My favorite triathlon is Happy Valley.
the one we just talked about, like, yep, okay, it's coming back.
Yeah, well, and one, the name alone, like, how can you not be happy racing in Happy Valley? Like, they just did an exquisite job of the organization of that course. And while there was a technical downhill with a gated, there was a speed limit, they did a great job of keeping us safe. And, you know, there was some rain, so it could have been particularly dicey at different points. It was just super fun. It was just an absolutely gorgeous course. Great time of year, temperature wise.
Awesome. And do you know by chance if there is any sort of like scheduled engagement there, like they've locked it in for the next 3 years or 5 years or anything like that?
I believe they have a three-year contract.
Three-year contract. Okay. That sounds pretty normal within the Ironman brand. I obviously have no particular affiliation with them, but it sounds like that's kind of their normal MO, kind of go with a three-year stint and see how things go. Hopefully, we'll see in the next 3 years if I have an opportunity to get out to Happy Valley. So we'll see how that goes.
I got distracted by the scenery. It was gorgeous.
Hey, sometimes that's the mental benefit that I need. I need something pretty to look at because just out there pushing hard and doing my best, which isn't all that fantastic, but pushing that hard, sometimes it's nice to just have something pretty to look at.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. So what part of triathlon would you consider to be your strongest or weakest at this point?
Irony, my strongest now is the biking component. Which, you know, before the accident, I would have said it was running. I was, you know, I was been a runner since middle school. And, you know, that's always been my go-to sport. That's where I can find the stream of consciousness, you know, and in that flow state really quickly and just love it. But running's been the hardest thing to come back post sacral fracture. And so biking now is my love. I particularly love it when there's no vehicles on the road. And swimming is my limiter. You know, I am an adult onset swimmer. I am still learning what that looks like. And I also have a plate in my neck. So that makes it difficult for breathing and positioning of, you know, in the water. I'm excited to that I will be working with Rob Sealmaker, who is the creator and owner of Vasa Trainer. And I'll actually be visiting with him on December 8th. Up in Vermont and going to their headquarters and getting a one-on-one with him. And I'm looking forward to tweaking my training this winter, leaving the pool. I'm going to ditch the pool and I'm going to just commit to the Vasa trainer for the winter and then transition to open water as it gets warm enough.
Very cool. So I've heard good things about the trainers, the dry land trainers that they have. I have not been on one myself, so I will look forward to your review.
Yeah.
I'm not a big winter swimmer anyway. So not hitting the pool over the winter, sign me up. Actually getting some swim fitness while not being in the cold pool. That sounds like an interesting proposition. So I'll look forward to your thoughts.
Well, I purchased the Vasa trainer during COVID as my solution to no pool. And I found that when I would transition to the open water, that I would actually think about how was I swimming with a higher elbow and the position on the Vasa trainer, and I would actually swim better in the open water. I just need to do more of it. I need to learn more because I wasn't able to sustain that. And, you know, there's a learning curve. And so I look forward to tackling that.
Very cool. And getting an individual consultation with Rob, that sounds like it'll be a neat experience either way.
Oh, I'm so grateful. I'm really excited about that.
Cool. One of the questions that we do like to ask here on the podcast is if there was a turning point in regards to your training. And obviously, we've talked about a very significant event in your training. When you reflect back on that and you think about that turning point in your career, is there anything else that you would like for our audience to know about your journey and kind of how that progression has worked out for you?
Yeah. So, you know, getting hit by a car definitely is a scary event, right? And so I definitely had fears about getting back on the road again. And I really struggled with biking on the road with vehicles and really had some PTSD around that. And so I understood the neuroscience of neuroplasticity, how to rewire your brain. I understood what the limbic system was doing for me. It was trying to keep me safe, even though I was like, stop. I want a bike. Stop scaring me with this limbic system, keep you safe messages. And so I just really, every day I got on the bike, it was a commitment to myself and it was an act of courage because I would have anxiety about just preparing and getting on the bike. And I would be really scared and tense on the bike for like the first 5 miles. But I knew if I could just get through that first 5 miles that I would have a completely different experience. And that first 5 miles takes me roughly about 15 minutes. So what I didn't know, but I had the lived experience of, was that that's about how long it takes to get into a flow state when you have bilateral body movement in zone two, is about 12 to 15 minutes. And so I was like, oh, so that's what I was experiencing, was that I just had to do what the body needed to activate that parasympathetic nervous system with the bilateral body movement, activate that vagus nerve, calm down that sympathetic fight or flight response. And in 5 miles, I was good. And in fact, the folks that I would train with would be like, Denise, you're behind the pack, scanning for danger all the time when we're biking as a group. And then we get to this one road and you're like, we can't keep up with you. And so I had this for several years, about 7 years, really, honestly, but it would start to ebb as each year went. And I just kept showing up and I would increase the challenges. So it was like learning to bike with clipless pedals again, like you start on the trainer and then you start in the parking lot and then you go to a quiet road and then you increase the level of complexity or the level of risk. And I was just very grateful to have folks who showed up when I needed them in a way that helped me to heal. So I remember one time I'd get to an intersection and I would just start crying, you know, and it wasn't anything I had any control over. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry I'm messing up your ride, which was something I really didn't want to be doing, was messing up other people's rides. And I just remember my friend Mark Dupuy stopping and saying, it's okay, we'll be messy together. And he walked across the street with me. It was like a 4-lane road. And it was the most kind, compassionate thing that he could do for me, because then I knew, like, once I got back on the bike again, the prescription was move that body, get back on the bike and 5 miles, you'll be fine. And sure enough, I was good to go in another 5 miles. But having friends show up in that way, understanding that PTSD isn't something that I can consciously control, it's a physiologic response, was instrumental in that process. But about 2 years ago, I got on the bike and it was gone. And I was like, what? I'm not afraid anymore. And what it's allowed me to do, I mean, this is really the pivot point. It's allowed me to be more aggressive on the bike. It's allowed me to engage in racing in a way that is maybe pushing the limits a little bit on turns or being a little bit more risky and not having the fear. I'm more relaxed on the bike, so I'm safer, faster. And I'm really seeing that as being why I'm had like this past year, why I had the success that I did was because I'm not biking scared.
Well, that's fantastic. And for those of you in the audience that notice some of the technical terminology thrown around in there, you may want to recognize as well that Denise has been a professional educator for a little while now. Denise, could you tell us a little bit about your education background just so everybody has some background and can appreciate, oh, well, hey, if I didn't really understand that at first pass, how does Denise know all this stuff?
Yeah. So I have a doctor in health education from Columbia University, where I specialized in health behavior and health psychology. I'm actually practicing what I've learned, what my degree is in, on myself. I have been a health science educator for the past 30 years. So I have this wonderful opportunity to support young people in developing their passion for health and fitness as well.
That is awesome. Now I don't quite feel so bad if I'm missing the terminology and trying to think back to my biology course and realize that there's no way that stuff's coming back. You have a wealth of knowledge there. It's interesting that knowing is different than doing. So you knew all this stuff while you were experiencing those times, but at some level, the body's still taking charge and it's still going to have those experience, even though intellectually and logically you might know what's going on. You can't just tell the body not to experience that. It just doesn't work that way. But you took the time and worked through it. You had supportive people around you. And I'm very excited for the place that you're in now, and where you're headed moving forward.
Yeah, thank you. It's fun.
All right. Super cool. When you were training and racing with other women, I was curious if you had some key differences that you had noticed about the women's triathlon culture.
Well, the women's triathlon culture is so supportive. We really want to see other women be successful in the sport. I have just met so many amazing women in this sport that just inspire me, and the ways not only that they're able to navigate the sport, but their legacy that they're leaving in the sport. I think of, for example, Khadijah Diggs, who's the first Muslim American female on Team USA, who recently just got her full body covered kit approved, not just through Ironman, but also USAT, so that any woman who identifies as Muslim can race and not have to worry about whether or not their times are going to count or not. Right. So she's an amazing high frequency human. I encourage you to check her out on social media. She is someone who is making great strides in the sport for women, specifically women who identify as Muslim.
Okay, very cool. I guess related to that, at this point, who would you consider someone that you admire most in the sport today?
I think the Canadian pro triathlete Melanie McQuaid is a rock star. I mean, she just at age 50 qualified for Kona and raced in Kona this fall. And you know, while she's been a world champion in like other like I think it's gravel or off, you know, different types of bike courses, and she's been doing Ironman and she's a coach, I love that she has this newbie mindset at age 50 as a pro triathlete going into Kona. And I just love that she provides us yet another example that age is not a limiter and that anything is possible in the sport of triathlon. And so for me, I really look up to her as a role model.
Very cool. At this point, do you have an A race that you're planning for? I'm thinking planning ahead for year 2024 at this point. Again, we're recording in November of 2023. Do you have an A race or a plan in mind that you're working on for next year?
My plan is focused around the 70.3 distance and really honing in my training for that distance and trying to continue to improve in that lane. As far as signing up for a race, I have not yet. I have some that I'm looking at, and I have an annual training plan sort of draft quasi made. But there has been a lot of movement with triathlon regards to the PTO and Ironman, what they're offering, how they're leveraging, moving things around, and then certainly the upheaval with transport right now. And you know, how do I get there? How does my bike get there? I'm really sort of thinking about, at least for this year, thinking maybe staying more on the East Coast, just to sort of manage some of those variables. But I definitely want to focus on the 70.3 distance, and I would love to qualify for Worlds again. And my long sight is I'd like to qualify for Kona.
Oh, very nice. Okay. So still have lots of aspirational efforts out
Yes,
there,
I do.
which is great. I think that's one of the nice things about our sport in general. There's always something you can aspire to. You get to pick your flavor, whatever is of interest to you, whether it be short course, long course, whatever it might be. There's always something else that you can look forward to. So that's great. Has there been an investment that you would consider to have been a big waste of time, energy, or money for you?
Purchasing anything at the Ironman event, and like so much of that is overpriced. And you know, if you just wait till the race is over, is this frugal-minded triathlete, you know, can save some money. I'm really a bare bones budget-minded triathlete. You know, I'm not, you might actually find duct tape on my bike from time to time, you know, because I'm just I really want to play in the sport. And I don't necessarily need to have the best of the best. For me, I believe that it's the engine behind the bike or behind the triathlete that matters most, and not so much the fancy latest equipment. You know, the clothing and all of that at the athlete venues can be, you know, a big waste of money. It's fun to have, but it's not necessary.
I agree. I am a big fan of my souvenir race shirt of that has the Finisher logo on it. The rest of that stuff, I think, and not slighting Ironman.
Oh, no, not at all. And not slighting anyone who really wants all of that too. But for me, you know, as a public school teacher with a limited finances who wants to play big in this sport, I have to pick and choose.
That's great. Is there anything else or maybe some closing words that you would like for the world to know about you and your journey in triathlon?
I would want people to know that I, you know, when they hear my name, that she never gave up and that I always chose courage over fear. And in fact, people who really know me know that if something scares me, I say yes to it.
I love that. That is fantastic. Inspirational words from an inspirational person. Denise, thank you very much for your time here. I do also want to open up the floor to you as well. And you know, all of the Money Mile community appreciates your time, but wanted to give you the floor, hoping you can share with us anything else that's going on in your world that you would want us to know about.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about my avenue in becoming a certified, board certified health and wellness coach through Well Coaches. I have a small number of clients that I work with right now, and it's just super charges me up when helping people meet their goals and having them believe in themselves and to be independent. Like my goal is for them to not need me, but to learn the skills about health behavior change and to learn about their own psychology. So enough so that they can then take everything that we work on together and then hit the repeat button or reapply it in a way that works for them, and to have them have that sense of agency over their own bodies and their own lives. To me, there's nothing that's, I mean, that's just super fun to be a part of. I love seeing people thrive. So it's really fun to be a health coach. Again, I keep my numbers pretty low because I want to give them the best of me. I really value those relationships. And so, if I do have a few openings, so if there are some folks that want some health coaching, I focus with a nature-inspired mindset. In other words, that nature offers us a lot of what we need for our own healing, but also using a lifestyle medicine philosophy.
Very nice. That sounds fascinating. I'm sure there are people in the community that would benefit a ton from that. Do recognize that your time is limited. You are still a professional educator. You're working on this, so you're very selective with the number of people that you're working with. But we'll include in the show notes the best method to contact you. For the folks that are listening here, if they did find interest in this, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
To reach out to me would be to most likely visit me through my social media account, which is Dr. Denise Allen, like on Instagram and on Facebook page. I do have a website that I'm working on revising and rebuilding and renaming at this point. So I'm rather than give an old website name, I'll hold off on that. But certainly we can add my email address and they can reach out to me directly via email.
Perfect. Instagram is a great place to start, and then we'll include your email address if it's okay with you. We'll include that in the show notes so folks can have that to follow up with you. Denise, thank you again so much for your time. I really appreciate you sharing with us your journey, your experience, your bravery, your tenacity, your comeback story, and I'm very much looking forward to many more successful adventures for you in the future. Thank you again for joining us here on Money Mile.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks again to Denise Allen for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time and all of the knowledge that you shared with us. I hope you found this conversation valuable as well. If you did, please share the podcast with your training buddies and friends. And if you work out, everything else will too. And we'll look forward to talking with you next time on Money Mile.